That is one of my favorite Cleveland bands growing up. I jammed out to them. And guess what? We have on the other end of our phone line my dear cousin, Rodney Sika. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And George Siffel. And Rod, you were actually a member of the Michael Stanley Band, played percussion, correct?
Well, it's the Resonators. It's the band that was born after the original band. And I've been with Michael now for 34 years.
Wow. As someone that grew up in the Detroit area, I was not in tune to what was happening in the Cleveland rock scene because we were doing our thing. But there are so many great bands that came out of your town, and they really influenced a lot of rock.
Yeah, there's a lot of great bands that came out of here. And George and I were part on the ground floor with some of these bands. And, you know, we continue to make music today. We don't play out as much as in tour like we used to, but certainly we're still writing, I think, great music. And that's why we're here today.
And George, tell us some of the bands that you were involved with and help along the way in Cleveland area.
Well, I was in Eric Carmen's band after he left the Raspberries and played on his first two solo albums, toured with him for a number of years. I was in a band called Breathless with this Rodney character. and then I was in a group called American Noise in the late 70s, early 80s, which was supposedly the band that was supposed to happen. Well, oops. Later on, I mixed Hungry Eyes and played on Hungry Eyes for the Dirty Dancing movie.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that because I had heard that you had done that. And was that, did you do a lot of the backwoods work in terms of doing the recording and mixing and all that?
What's funny is I didn't get involved in the project until the final stages. What had happened was I had been managing Beachwood Studios, which was the largest audio video facility in town, and I was chief audio engineer. Problem is, my job was, 9 to 5. I was the boss, and when Eric came in to do this song, for Dirty Dancing, which I thought was a porn movie at the time.
we all did.
Yeah, I mean, and I said, well, he wanted to start at 4 in the afternoon and go till 3, 4 in the morning. And I said, no, I'm sorry. I gave him my protege, Jim Demain, who's turned into a great mastering engineer in Nashville right now. And so Jim actually did the basic recording. But then when it came time to mix, they called on me to do it. And they asked me to do some overdubs and some changes. And I was glad to. I took 2 more days in the studio on it, and added some synth parts and mixed it.
For those that don't know about how a mix is done and a remix, we all see great songs, whether the Beach Boys or the Beatles, whoever, that a new copy comes out and it's been remixed. Explain to the people listening what that person does to mix a song and what that whole process is.
Oh, wow. It could be a variety of things. Just a straight remix would be taking the multiple tracks of individual instruments and maybe realigning the levels, maybe just changing the sounds, and then creating a new updated mix. Similar to what they did with the Beatles' early tapes and then switched it to digital, and they just made it sound better. Then there's remixes that a lot of the dance groups do, a lot of the pop DJs, where they actually take, you know, they'll take a chorus and loop it around a few times and add totally different instruments and totally recreate the song using perhaps lyrics, using perhaps the basic guitar structure or chords or whatever. So it really, I mean, it's like making cookies. You know, you can have one recipe one day, and then the next mm-hmm. day you go, you know, if right. I added this to it.
So right. you really, the person who mixes a song really creates the sound of a song in terms of the special things about the song that make it good. It's not necessarily the person who actually plays those tracks.
I like to look at it as a union. I mean,
it's like a
collaboration. There's no question about it. You know, yes, you do have kind of, and that's where the producer comes in. You know, the producer is God and Lord in the studio. He's the one who makes all the decisions. He's even the one who makes decisions who plays on the tracks, what they play on the tracks, and then tells the engineer how it's mixed. When I mixed Hungry Eyes, I didn't have a producer in there at the time. I did it on my own, so that was fun.
Ron, you and George are working on a collaboration together. You're finding some older songs that you have come across and are now doing the remixing and revocalizing of these songs, correct?
Yeah, so what happened is since I retired, I have more time now, and part of what I do, besides recording new music in my home studio, is I review old cassette tapes and old reel-to-reel tapes. I've gone through about 200 cassettes, and I listen to them all the way through both sides so that if there's a little idea on there that I think is worth redoing, I have it, and I have like 20 master tapes of these ideas. So on the back of one of those tapes, I found this idea that George and I were working on like 40 years ago, okay, when we were in Breathless together. And
I was 2 years old at the time.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought, wow, this is really cool. And I didn't know exactly who it was. I mean, I heard my voice. I didn't know who was playing keyboards. And then in between, I heard George and I talking. So me being the technical wizard that I am, I played it for George on my phone. And he listened to it, and he goes, well, I think that's me playing keyboards, but bring the cassette over. So I brought it over, and, you know, he transferred it to his computer, you know, his studio.
Mm-hmm.
And about a week later, he emails me an MP3 of the song completely produced, and I was like, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. So another week goes by, I come over and I, you know, do some vocals and a little bit of percussion, and then another week goes by. This is like, I think, just before the holidays, right, George?
That's right.
Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, then he sends me the final version, and I'm like, I mean, he did everything on it. He orchestrated it. He played all the instruments. I don't know how he played guitar on keyboards, but he did somehow. And that's what came out of, you know, finding that little idea on that cassette from like 40 years ago. So we're going to continue to work together and you know, on new material. And I'm working on another CD with another songwriting partner that George is definitely going to be involved in. And so that's how this came about.
When you 40 years ago, when you guys were in Breathless and were doing your thing in Cleveland, what kind of notoriety or what kind of stage were you at with Breathless, and who did you tour? What did you do?
Well, the beginning, you know, we did bar gigs. We were managed by Belkin Productions, who did all the big shows in the area, and we had a theater, an old movie theater that George and I and Kevin Valentine, the drummer, we built a plastic, we called it the bubble, over the lobby of the theater, and we rehearsed there every day, just like a job. It was like we got there, we, you know, 6 to 8 hours a day we worked on music. And then we would do, you know, local gigs, you know, different bars, to, you know, at the Agoras and different places. So then one day we're rehearsing, and we get a call from Belkin, and says, you guys are opening for Foreigner tomorrow at the Toledo Sports Arena. So, you know, we drove up there, and, you know, no sound check. We just plugged everything in, and we did, I think, like a 45-minute set. And that was one of the first, you know, big gigs that we did with that version of the band. And I think we sounded pretty good, but, you know, who knows? Nobody recorded it. But, I mean, it was a great experience, you know, opening up for that band. They were great at that time.
When you
go ahead.
When you back up for a band, do you actually interact with them at all, or they basically are getting ready for their show, and you just play for 40 minutes or so, and then the crowd is just coming in, and you leave, and that's it?
Well, you know, Breathless opened up. Yeah, I mean, you know, usually, you know, the opener doesn't get much attention from right. the audience or the headliners, and you know, we opened up later on down the road. We were on a tour with Kiss, and, you know, it was frightful because the lights would go down, and we would go on stage, and all you heard was people chanting, you know, for Kiss. And then here's this Cleveland band that not many people knew about nationally, and, you know, we started playing our music. And actually, as the tour went on, we did win over a lot of the crowds because, you know, that was a great band. Breathless was great at that time. And the only person that we interacted with was Gene Simmons, the bass player, because he was super friendly. Matter of fact, he invited myself and Alan Green into his dressing room when he was doing his makeup. And he let us put on those big boots, you know, those claw boots
yeah.
that he has.
Yes.
So, you know, but other than that, most of the groups, and probably the same thing with George, most of the groups that you open up for, you don't have a lot of interaction, and you got to really play that 45 minutes right to the T. Otherwise, you know, they shut the power off and the lights. and with Kiss, and even with Kiss, the volume on the main console out in front was like a quarter of the volume. So when they came on, you know, with the lights and the fireworks, and the volume was 10 times louder than the opening act. So
and it went all the way up. It went all the way up to 11, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, I got to tell you, Kiss was musically, you know, they weren't a fantastic band like some, you know, like Journey and some of the other bands we opened for, but their show was just unbelievable. And this was 1979. Their show was unbelievable. I mean, it was the fireworks, the flames, and they allowed us to be backstage when all that was going on. They just said, watch out for the flamethrowers and everything and the fireworks, but you guys are okay. Just keep your distance, you know.
Is the Michael Stanley Band going to continue to perform?
Well, we had about 10 dates booked. One of our last dates was the Akron Civic in March. And we had several dates booked through Live Nation for the remainder of 2020. And unfortunately, when COVID hit,
right.
Everything was either postponed or canceled. Some of them were canceled. But, I mean, some of them are still on the calendar for this year. But we're all kind of waiting. Everybody's waiting to see, you know, what's going to happen as far as live performance all over the world. So our hope is that we would, you know, play again. We, you know, we're all looking forward to it, but, you know, we just don't know at this point. I just finished recording, I think it's like the 22nd or 23rd CD with Michael, that will be out sometime this year. I don't know what it's called, but, I know he's finishing that up. I was in touch with him last week. So
awesome.
If the band doesn't play, there will be a CD coming out.
Good.
Now, this song that we're going to play as we leave you is a song that you have remixed, and explain what this song is.
Well, I found the idea, and then I gave it to George, and George, take it from there, George.
I played and arranged all the parts via computer, which I know a lot of people look at something like that and they go, oh, you press a button and suddenly the drums appear. No, I mean, all that stuff has to be either programmed or performed. like Rodney said, like I did the guitar solos and all the guitars in it. And the guitars, even though they're played on a keyboard, have to be performed. So I did the arrangement of it, and I sent it to Rodney, and you know, for approval. And he liked it, so he said, "Let's do the vocal." We did the vocal, and I mixed it, and voila.
And this song is this song is again originally from what group and from when?
I was just going to say when we were in Breathless together. We were, you know, writing some music together. Breathless was basically Jonah Coslin's brainchild. All the music for Breathless was written by him, even though there were other songwriters in the band at the time. You know, he had left Michael Stanley to do his own music, and we knew that going into it. So, but George and I were creative at that time, and we worked on some things. We couldn't remember where we did it, and George thinks it was at his apartment somewhere in Lakeview.
Yeah,
but
that's
how it came together.
Well, we're going to play I'm a Fool, or I'm the Fool, by Rodney Sycia and George Sipple. We thank you so much for joining us today and making that Cleveland connection with us.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us. We sure appreciate it.
All right.
Well, thanks for having us.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Try.
This Classic Hits AccuWeather with the forecast is brought to you by Reinecke RV of Tiffin and Toledo. Get your RV from Reinecke.